Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Stuart Wiener. He's going to talk about the housing market bottoming out. So if you have any questions, feel free to pose a question in the chat room, or you can call the studios at 347-324-3460. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's great to be here.
I guess to begin with, our listeners like to get personal views, personal stories on how the person they buy you. So if you don't mind sharing with us for a moment, tell us about yourself.
Well, number one, I'm a little old. So I've been in the real estate activities for a pretty long time, probably over 40 years. At one time, I owned the second largest mortgage company in Los Angeles County. I've arranged financing for casinos. I was a consultant to Noah Dietrich, who was Howard Hughes' partner at one time. And I've provided down payment assistance. And right now, for the last few years, we've been helping people get out of over-encumbered real estate with the least amount of problems. So I've been around a little bit.
Well, it's a good thing, because you have all this experience we can draw from.
Well, I hope so.
You know, let's go back for a second. I remember the 80s, and I remember the ups and downs in real estate. And the 80s were boom years, in one sense, a lot of development, a lot of suburbs popping up all over the country. And we had a crash, and things seems to level out, and then all of a sudden we got another bump in the 90s. It was like a roller coaster. Then we got to 2000, and then things went the Wild Wild West. If you don't mind, kind of give us some historicals. What really happened from 20 years ago to bring us up what caused us to bottom out?
Well, I think the biggest problem, at the time when I owned a mortgage company back then in the 80s and early 90s, and they came out with a loan product, which was a good product. It was a no-income verifying loan. But what it was designed for, a jumbo loan for big loans that were not Fannie and Freddie products. For people that were putting 35% down, people that had excellent credit, that had 2-3-inch thick tax returns where you could see $1 million cash flow, you know, going through the account, but the bottom line was $25,000. So, you know, the underwriters couldn't qualify these people. You had to qualify for mortgages, but you could see that it was there. And they came out with a no-income verifying loan for these specific type of people. And it perverted itself into something that anybody could just put anything down, any income whatsoever. In fact, I had a man a few years ago come to me. He pulled a trailer behind his truck with a lawnmower in it. He didn't speak English, which I have to assume might be an earning disadvantage. And he had 5 mortgages, about $500,000 each. No income verifying. How much grass can one cut?
Wow.
And that's what happened. I mean, everybody just had these ridiculous loans they could never afford. They figured they'd flip the property before the balloon came due, or before they'd ever have to make the first payment, they'd be out of it. And then everything crashed. And that's what I think happened.
Well, you know, I know that. What is the advantage of a mortgage company to take something like this? And you can see the picture black and white during the process of verification, what's there and what's not there. Was it the incentive behind it is to get the deal done, to make points on it, or?
Well, you know, along every step of the way, somebody makes money. Everyone makes money in every process, from the appraiser to the mortgage originator. Everyone makes money until then the loan is finally made. But what happened back in the early 80s, when savings and loans were thriving, people would go to their savings and loan for a mortgage for their loan. And if I remember right, they would have to make a loan within 50 miles radius of their individual branch. Then the savings and loan industry completely went off the deep end, as we all know.
Absolutely.
They started investing in commercial properties and everything that they shouldn't do and that they weren't supposed to do, and the industry crashed. And I think it cost something like $150 million. I mean, it was a huge billion. It was a huge loss. But now we're dealing with T's, not D's. We were dealing with big numbers. And what has happened to the mortgage market is the industry changed where banks don't make loans. They may make a commercial loan or a credit card loan or an auto loan, but mortgages are all sold on Wall Street in the secondary market as mortgage-backed securities. So along the way, they didn't care what would happen as long as the loan would get sold. And take Countrywide, which was a toxic portfolio of bad loans that were sold on Wall Street as A paper, good loans, and they weren't. And that's where we are today.
Well, if you go back from that moment, you know, you had the savings and loan industry, and I remember, you know, going to a savings and loan that were all over the country, all over the neighborhood, and all of a sudden it crashed. We didn't understand that that could happen again 20 years later?
Well, apparently not. I mean, you look at just a few years ago, we had Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, saying that Fannie was healthy and Freddie Mac was healthy and the mortgages are all good, where we all know that they weren't. And even Bush was saying all along, I mean, it's easy to blame Bush, but he was saying there's something the matter with Fannie and Freddie, and he was right. And they were just buying bad loans, and eventually it had to burst. And the balloon popped.
And it was just out of total greed. Now, also, you know, during the 80s, you had the assumption loans. And slowly, I guess people, I'm not going to say people abused it, or people through the process abused the system. Then all of a sudden, we couldn't do assumptions anymore. Our assumptions became harder. Can you tell us about, during that process, what happened during that time regarding assumptions?
Yes, that actually ended in December 31st of 1989. I think it was the Wellenkamp Law, if I remember right. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that was it. But assumable loans, all loans were basically assumable. FHA loans were all assumable for, I think, $35. It was just a very nominal amount of money. And that's when the Carter years, when interest rates went through the ceiling. Then people were doing land contracts, any way to try to keep the same mortgage as a wraparound or some way to not have to get a new loan. But virtually there are really no fully assumable loans anymore today except commercial property. Commercial loans are assumable because it's a loan on a piece of property, not for a person.
Okay. Kind of, if you don't mind, tell us what are the three ways that a person can really qualify for a loan? I know you have a VA, FHA, and conventional. Can you talk about the differences between those three?
Sure.
And are there any other opportunities for people to obtain a loan?
Well, number one, to get a loan today, you just said the word, you have to qualify. You have to have credit, of course. There has to be an appraisal, which is the collateral, the value of what you're pledging. And then this is what was lacking the last few years, is you have to have income verification. You have to have 2 years typically of employment in the same industry. You don't have to be on the same job for 2 years, but you have to be in the same field. You don't go from being a greeter at Walmart to a nuclear physicist. Unless you're an Iranian nuclear physicist, you'd probably be better to be a greeter at Walmart to be safer. But seriously, you have to be in the same profession, and you have to have verifiable income. If you're an employed person, you'd have W-2s, pay stubs. If you're self-employed, you have to have 2 years of tax returns and a current profit and loss, which is like your Schedule C, which verifies the income. And it has to stay in line with the last 2 years. You don't go from making $50,000 to $100,000 the last 6 months. I mean, everything has to defensible and makes sense. Then you can get a loan. You can get an FHA loan, which as little as 3.5% down, you can get a loan. A Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loan, you can still get, with mortgage insurance, a pretty high loan to value. And then you mentioned a VA loan. A VA loan is a VA guaranteed loan. And that is, of course, available to eligible veterans who haven't used their eligibility in the past or have not had it released, who've had it released, in other words. And a VA loan is a little different mentality than the FHA or Fannie Freddie loan. What it is it's a right that was granted someone by an act of Congress. So I think it's a lot harder to take that right away. So you could be a little more marginal to the credit worthiness, but it's hard to take away your VA right because that's a right that was granted to you for serving your country as an act of Congress. Did that explain it?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to buying a foreclosure through HUD or a VA, are those qualifications still in force that you, yes, you're going to still have to qualify, but is it a lot easier? What's the difference between buying those foreclosed properties from VA and also for HUD from HUD?
Well, I don't think there is a difference in qualification. You still have to qualify for your mortgage, but I think that buying a foreclosed property, whether it be from a bank foreclosure or from a VA or HUD, is probably better than trying to negotiate a short sale because you, those are very tough to do, and a lot of these short sales never really even go through. But when you're dealing with the agencies that have already foreclosed the property, they're then known as REOs or real estate owned, then the motion is out of there, and it's strictly a business transaction.
Okay, I follow.
Well, one thing that is important, on an FHA and a VA loan, there is a little built-in protection for the buyer where they do require a pretty stringent inspection of the property, and the property has to be safe and up to standards. That's good for the buyer.
Okay, and what's a typical credit score to qualify for a loan today?
I think you're probably looking at around 720. Around that range. I mean, it's up there.
So you need
it. I think we need to relax that a little bit. I think that's one of the problems. It's been a little bit of overkill. And there's an awful lot of very good people that are not able to get a loan that really are decent credit risks. I'd like to see that change, and I think it will change a little bit.
So 720 credit score, that is really extremely high. Well, in the course of things, when the most average person would be somewhere in the mid to high 600s.
Well, again, don't hold me to that because I haven't actually written mortgages in a while, and this is what I'm hearing, but I may be over the high on that.
Any particular down payment requirement? I know you mentioned 3.5% for VHA. Anything typically they really need to have? Hey, you're going to pay 20% or 10%. If it's
conventional
to avoid
any mortgage insurance, you'd want to put at least 20% down. But sometimes another option is to have a seller carry back a second of maybe 10%. So it's like an 80% first to 10% down payment and a 10% second. You see a lot of that. You can also get a gift from a close family member. So, you know, it has to be an unrelated. It can't come from the seller, but it can be an unrelated person who's unrelated to the transaction. It's like a family, a parent, a grandparent. That's also allowed.
Okay. We're going to take a break real quick, and then we're just going to get talk about the housing market bothering him out. Be back in one moment with Stuart Wiener.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Chicang.
We're back with Stuart Wiener, talking about the housing market bottom out. Kind of tell us about where we are today with the housing market.
Well, I think we're getting close to bottom, although the banks do hold a lot of property that they've already foreclosed on and that they're in the process of foreclosing. But they're not going to flood the market with it immediately. So, I mean, that would be a disaster, and they know that themselves. You're seeing a change in the housing market, which I think will help the recovery. I don't know if it's a good change necessarily, but you see a lot of private equity firms coming in and buying lots of properties for cash at really low prices and turning them into rentals. So you're seeing a recovery starting, but it's recovery of property being sold to rent, not for people so much to make their homes and their nests. So that's not the best thing. Another thing that you are seeing, which is very interesting, in fact, we have a link to this on our website, that there's a lot of foreign buyers with a lot of money coming here and buying property in this country. And there's a bill working its way through Congress right now. It's a bipartisan bill that was introduced by Chuck Schumer and Mike Lee that would give a 3-year renewable visa to a foreign national who comes here and spends at least $500,000 cash on real estate and $250,000 or more on a second home. And they don't get a work permit, so they can't take our jobs. They can only come here and bring our money back home and spend it, which I think is good legislation. And the foreigners are paying a lot of money. They're paying a lot. So that's,
wow,
that's helping a lot. That's been up 24% from the year before.
So are we getting a lot of buyers who's taking the bait across the world?
Oh, yes. We're getting a lot from China, from Canada, the UK, Mexico, India. I mean, they're spending a lot of money here, and there's so much instability with the euro that as much problems as we have, this still is the safest haven to put your money.
Mm-hmm.
No question about that.
How will we increase renters? Here's a question right here regarding renters. How can we bring them into the housing market if a person is renting today?
Well, you know, if someone's renting and they want to buy their home, they have to do it the old-fashioned way, which is what I did and what most people did a long time ago. You would rent your apartment or your house, and you would save for your down payment, and you would get your consumer credit in order, and then you would buy your first home. And maybe you couldn't buy the mansion on the hill, but you'd buy what's known as a starter home. And then you build from there. And I think that's really the only thing that will really truly recover everything in this country. The renters have to turn into buyers. But they have to get rid of this entitlement mentality that they've had where everything should be, everything they want, they should have immediately. I mean, you have to work for it.
With current homeowners, will they ever see the home prices value increase?
In time, but slowly. And I hope it doesn't go up like 20-30% a year, because that's sick and it just doesn't make sense. One good thing that has come out of all of this is that a young family today can get into their first home. And 5 years ago, that was almost an impossibility unless you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth.
Wow. You know, just a footnote real quick regarding the home values. Was it spawned by county agencies or city agencies who governments who want to increase their tax base, or is it just because of the market people is pushing the values to go up? Because I know here's the downside of that. Now they overestimate the expenses. Now they're in deficits because they don't have that tax base anymore.
Well, that's correct, and they're going to have to adjust as well. And I think some of these counties may actually have to file bankruptcy to get a reorganization and to get rid of some of these union contracts, which are absolutely stifling this whole country in industry as well as in government. You're in Florida, aren't you? So am I. But
Florida, our corporate is in Florida. Mm-hmm.
But in Florida right now, there's some new legislation that would be a tax break for first-time home buyers, which is going to take a bite out of the county revenue as well. But what I would like to see, frankly, and I haven't heard any talk about it, is something like that was done 40 years ago, or give or take, like a Proposition 13 that was done in California, which really did help housing a lot. It did hurt the counties temporarily, but everything did recover in time and their revenue increased. But that's where mm-hmm. everybody's taxes were lowered to 1% of what they paid for the property, and then with slight
wow.
increases thereafter. And it really did help people get into housing. And at the time, I remember my taxes went 1970 from 5,000 something to 1,800. I was thrilled.
Also, with garden rental properties, are they really good investments, or can you really flip these properties today?
They're great investments. In fact, okay. I don't think you're going to be able to flip them so fast unless you buy something that's really a mess and you're able to fix it up and rehab it. Then that's not really flipping it. That's improving a piece of property and selling it for a profit. But today you can buy properties at great prices and you'll get a good cash flow return on renting them. The problem is you need cash. It's going to be very hard to get mortgage money to finance these properties. But cash is king today when you're buying non-owner-occupied property.
Okay. We have a question here regarding a person who's coming up to be a mortgage banker or a real estate agent. What is your advice to them if they come into this market blindly? You know, they see the glamour of TV, but is it what's a realistic expectation if they're going to be a mortgage broker or going to be a real estate agent?
Well, let's start with real estate agent first, because that's
okay.
fairly easy for anyone to become a realtor. Typically, most states, it takes something like 30 hours of education, and you pass a test, and you get your license. And, you know, that's really not a lot of qualification for somebody. I mean, I think it takes something like 1,000 hours of education to get a license to cut hair. And if you mess up someone's hair, it'll grow back most of the time. But if you're going to become a realtor, become a good realtor and become a smart realtor. And just passing the test and doing the bare minimum is not going to really make you succeed in business. But you need to learn a lot more, study law, study all kinds of things so that when you're out to help somebody, you really can help them. For example, I see a lot of realtors steering people now, telling them that they should do a short sale when they're underwater. And in many cases, that could be a good idea, but also in many cases, people have a sizable amount of assets and other income, and they're underwater and they made a business decision that they have to get out of the property. A short sale can cause a disastrous tax consequence for these people, and the average realtor does not even know this, but they may end up owing Uncle Sam far more than they ever had to owe the lender.
Well, why is that?
Well,
yeah, if you don't mind.
When the bank takes a loss, they are required by federal law to send a 1099-C for cancellation of debt. And I've had realtors call me and say, oh, well, the bank said they'd waive that. The bank can't waive that. Federal law says you must send a 1099 when you write out the debt. You know, that's not waivable. That's federal law. So there is something called the Mortgage Debt Forgiveness Act, which is expiring this year, but it will only protect people from that loss on their primary residence and only to the extent of the original loan when they first bought the property. So somebody could have bought a property for $150,000 20 years ago, pulled $100,000 cash out, you know, the last few years ago, and now mm-hmm. it's back to what they originally paid, and they're going to end up having to pay income tax on $100,000 in the case of a short sale or any other event. So there's
wow.
strategies that can be employed, which are too complicated to go into on the phone. We do help people with that. But
okay.
you've got to be very careful, and a realtor has to be very careful in advising somebody, especially when it comes to tax advice in very complicated areas. I think, you know, getting a license certainly qualifies you to show the property and show the kitchen and the bathrooms and the carpets and to fill out the forms on the contracts, but be very careful advising people on tax and certain serious matters. That's my advice to someone going into that business. Now, you mentioned going and becoming a mortgage banker. Well, I think you'd become a mortgage broker, not a mortgage banker.
Broker.
A mortgage banker. It takes
okay.
a lot of money. because you're actually funding the loans before you sell them. But becoming a mortgage broker today, you do have to take some pass a national test, as well as many states have their own tests, and you have to really know what you're doing. But the best advice I can give anyone going into that business, and I was in that business over 20 years, is don't worry about your commission. Do the best job you can. Get the person the best loan that they can qualify for. And I've never closed a loan that I didn't get paid for. So don't be commission motivated. Just do your job
okay.
right. And I think that's true in any business. And you will get paid. So don't worry about getting paid.
Okay. Great. Anything else you'd like to leave us with, and how people want to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
Well, they can go to our website, which is realtycrisis.com. And if you get a Japanese rock and roll band, you spelled reality. It's realtycrisis.com. It's true. And I'm not Japanese, nor do I sing. And they can also call me at 877-94-HELP-ME.
Okay, all repeat right? that one more time. Okay.
877-94-HELP-ME or realtycrisis.com.
Perfect. Sir, thank you for coming on to the program.
Thank you, Tim. Have a great day.
Same here. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can download this episode on iTunes on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a great day. Lastly, my producer said, if you have any comments or suggestions, please email that to us at info@applecapitalgroup. Also, we love to have some reviews on some of these shows on iTunes, so if you don't mind, put a review in. Say, hey, I love this episode. I mean, tell us some good things that you learned about it. So, again, thank you for listening, everybody, and have a great day. You listen to The Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.